Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn, Thunder beat writer for the Oklahoman. I'm here again with Brett Dawson, Thunder beat writer for the Oklahoman.
Hello.
And Barry Trammell, columnist for the Oklahoman. Barry?
Hello, Barry.
What am I supposed to?
You're just letting the people hear your voice.
Oh, was I supposed to say something?
I would imagine you'd want to introduce and be like, hey, Barry Trammell here.
I can channel my inner Andy Griffith. Hello.
Barry was looking off.
Hello.
Barry was looking off into the distance.
You ever seen No Time for Sergeants?
I have not.
It's one of the all-time great comedy classics. Hadn't seen it in 20 years, and I saw it the other night.
Podcasting 101 is like every time somebody gets introduced for the first time, they say something so that everybody gets to know their voice.
Okay.
But I think people know Barry's voice.
Okay. I do have a distinctive voice. It's an oaky. I got an oaky accent. Not any question about that.
One of the best comedies I've seen in a while was the NBA Finals. Am I wrong?
I thought you were going to say that the Foot Locker commercial this morning with Lonzo Ball.
That was good, too. That was a good one. It didn't quite hit the comedic value of the finals.
I would say it wasn't a comedy. I would say it was more a serial drama from the 70s because comedies, you actually didn't really know how it's going to end, some of the comedies end, because people aren't in peril and all that stuff. In the dramas of the 70s, there was always a contentiousness and, you know, some concern, and was this going to turn out all right? Except you knew exactly how it was going to turn out. Mannix was going to get the bad guy.
Chris Mannix?
No, you never heard of Mannix? You've never heard of Mannix?
The cop, right?
Yeah, he's a private eye. Joe Mannix?
I've heard of Chris Mannix.
Oh, boy. Stop the world, please. Stop the world, please.
I know. Shout out to Chris Mannix. I know of Columbo. Was that the bald guy with the lollipops?
That was Telly Savalas
Come on, Barry.
Kojak.
Yes.
That's Kojak.
I knew it was a
Could
sound.
You say?
I said Columbo.
Yeah, Columbo was Peter Falk.
Yeah,
but anyway, all of these, you knew what was going to happen at the end, and that's what the NBA Finals was. Just we knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, but those guys had even less stress than like Indiana Jones. Like those guys, there was even less fear for the Warriors didn't even have to sweat like
a pit of snakes
or a big rolling ball.
Could you even file these finals under like the definition of like a Greek comedy, which was actually had like the sad, tragic elements to it? Am I wrong? Isn't that the definition of like a Greek comedy where like it's actually like a tragedy?
I don't know. You're getting into things I don't know a lot about.
Am I going too podcasty deep? Am I going too nerd? Am I getting too
not
nerd?
Not necessarily.
Brett, are you Googling comedy?
No.
Dang it.
Sorry. I guess I should have been.
But it was predetermined.
The people don't want me to type, so I'm not going to type.
It was predetermined. I don't mind you typing, by the way. I think it's an excellent back noise.
Well, as you're saying, predetermined. The die was cast before this finals even started. I stupidly said that the Cavs would get to 7. After one game, I was like, all right, let's whittle this down to Warriors and 6. Couldn't even get that far because just too many weapons, man.
It's a miracle they went 5. I don't know how they went 5.
Well, they made 24 three-pointers in one game.
Wow, that'll do it. I realize that.
You had to have a record-setting three-point game from one team.
That's the one game I missed. I was at a family reunion Friday night, didn't get back to my hotel room until about 10 o'clock. The fourth quarter was just starting. Cavs up 21, and I thought, you know what? Golden State might not win this game. That's where my
It took trust a level. Long time in that game to be like, okay, Cleveland's got this. Yeah. It took a long time to feel 100% confident.
About the three-minute mark, up still 21.
Yep. And it took a long time last night for me to, like, there was a period of time the other night, not last night, the other night when I thought like it was going to be a game, and then I was like, oh, it's going to be a total blowout. Cleveland did hang around a little longer than I thought they were going to.
Cap to the Cavaliers. They were competitive. Give them that. They were competitive. No doubt about it.
Considering the circumstances.
In the last three games, they were very competitive. The first two in Golden State.
It's not even that they really only played poorly the first game where they had all those turnovers. I mean, they had some clusters of turnovers in some of the other games, particularly in game 4 in the first half. But that's what's going to happen against a team that's that good defensively, too. You're going to commit turnovers. Like, some of them were just dumb. Sometimes they were trying to throw those post passes over the top and then trying to get it over one guy when Love or Tristan Thompson was sandwiched in between two guys, and Draymond would just sniff that out way too easily. But
and game 5, defensively, at the end, they just couldn't hang on anymore. They were doing a lot of silly things.
They were out of gas.
They gave up some easy stuff. They let some guys cut to the basket just totally untouched, and it was just, I think it was just, even in getting blown off the floor in a series, if 4-1, they had expended a ton of energy.
And that's the story of the series, really. Just these guys don't have enough gas to, nobody does in the league, to be able to run with the Warriors for 4 quarters because the Warriors just have so many better players than everybody else. When you can start quarters with Durant and Steph Curry both coming off the bench well rested, what are you supposed to do against that?
Especially when you Cleveland was positively thunder-like in the way it would go when LeBron came off the floor. I mean, it was
They had scored Golden State with LeBron on the floor in this series. Cleveland outscored Golden State, and he played most of the game.
But they had those. It was like those Westbrook type numbers in those stretches when he would go out for 2 minutes and they would get outscored by 12.
And they just get blown off the floor. Averages a triple double for the series. Could have been the series MVP. That typically doesn't go to a team who loses a player on a losing team. But I read a column by Mike Wise, the Undefeated, probably came out yesterday or a couple days ago, but I just read it today about how nobody should be talking about LeBron's legacy or how LeBron didn't do what he was supposed to do in this because he went to his 8th finals. I mean, he's been to as many finals as some of the great players in the league. The people, and this is something that Mike Wise mentioned, the people writing about these finals, we haven't been to any finals. And you can say that about a lot of people writing about a lot of things, but I mean, the guy went to a finals at 22. He's gone to a finals at 32. That's 8 finals in however many years that is. 11 or 10 years.
He's been, I believe I saw today, he's been in the playoffs 12 times. I think that's right. And he is 8-4 at getting to the finals those 12 times.
Two-thirds of the time, yeah.
So as this person pointed out, and this comparison is exhausting to me, but the thing we never talk about, and it's true that nobody ever talks about the fact that Michael Jordan in 13 years going to the playoffs was 6-7 and getting there. Now, he won it every time he made it, but he didn't make it as frequently. LeBron has made it a little bit more. Jordan was the greatest player of his generation. LeBron is the greatest player of this one. They're both great. I don't care.
Michael Jordan's 6 NBA titles is a monumental feat. So is LeBron James making 8 NBA finals. That's a monumental feat. And to throw rocks at LeBron because there's a hyphen 5, that 5 represents incredible accomplishment. So, you know, to me, LeBron's 8 finals in ever how many years you just said, Eric, is a major thing. Just let's go back to golf. You know, Jack Nicklaus, 18 majors, is that's the most incredible thing about Jack's career. You know what the second most incredible thing is? He finished second 19 times.
Yeah, it's incredible.
37 times he went to a major and finished first or second.
What a choker. Just don't look at all those chances he had to win and didn't do it.
Yeah, he had a losing record when he was in the top 2.
And it doesn't seem like we put anybody's career into that context except LeBron's. Like, we're always like, oh, well, he lost 5 finals. Like, yeah, he went to 5 finals. he took Eric Snow and Boobie Gibson to the finals as a 22-year-old. Like, what were you doing at 22, man? What was Michael Jordan doing at 22? He was scoring a lot of points. He wasn't going to the finals, I'll tell you that much. And then you can always say, like, you know, mid-80s, more competition in the NBA. I mean, you had the great Boston Celtics team and whatnot. But we continually take for granted what LeBron James does, like, every year. I mean, you wrote it this week, Barry, about, you know, it should always be the most valuable player, not that's
besides
not LeBron.
LeBron.
That's besides LeBron.
MVP, BL.
And I don't like to it's been hard for me this playoffs because I had NBA, all NBA votes and whatnot, and then you get to the playoffs and you see these players on a more consistent basis and you're like, holy crap, he's really good. Like, I should have put him here. But you can't think that way because it's a regular season award.
True.
You can't get caught up in a month span of play or a few games of play and say, holy crap, these guys are really stinking good. You just gotta go with, you know, everything you've seen during the season and the people you talk to and what you've seen, but you can't go off the playoffs because LeBron James would be the MVP or Kevin Durant would be the MVP of the league when Russell Westbrook had the best regular season of any player.
The other thing is, just in these last 3 finals, he's gone 1-2 against the Warriors. in this span, I saw a guy named Shane Young. Shout out to Shane Young. He writes for a bunch of different NBA sites, and he went to the same high school as me, about a million years apart. The Warriors in the last 3 years, in the playoff, the regular season and playoffs combined, are 254-54. That's what he played against in the last three finals. So he made one of those really competitive and lost. He won one, and, you know, the Warriors added the second best player on the planet and handled him pretty well in the third one. This represents pretty great accomplishment just in a three-year window.
It might have been even more and I think I kind of made this analogy about, you know, what the Warriors would have been the greatest team ever if they won last year, if they won the 73 games and then they beat LeBron in the finals and, you know, overcoming that 3-1 deficit against the Thunder. LeBron's march to the title his first year back in Cleveland might have been more impressive than almost anything else he'd done. And I know that's crazy saying that because he came back from that 3-1 deficit last year.
Yeah.
But, like, he won two games off of that Warriors team with no Kyrie and no Kevin Love.
Yeah.
In the first year back.
Yeah. Two, and they got up 2-1.
And they went up in the series.
His first trip to the finals, period, the first time in Cleveland, still might be the most impressive thing he's ever done. But
that was a great Warrior team. They won 67 games.
Yeah. No, they were great. I mean, they were great. They've been so great the last 3 years. There's a case to be made that this Warriors team this year was the best team that I've ever seen, because they didn't win 73, but they had the Kevin Durant injury, some things like that. They just mauled people in the playoffs. They were so good in the playoffs. It's as impressive a playoff run as I've ever seen.
The ease with which they dispatch teams is probably the most impressive we've seen in quite some time.
It gets a Kawhi Leonard asterisk by it. I think they would have beaten San Antonio, but that series would have been
a good point.
Different.
That's a good point.
Still.
Might have went five.
Yeah,
they might have lost the first game.
They probably would have lost game one, I think, if he hadn't gone out. You know, if they hadn't lost him in the midst of that game one. But after that, I mean, the sample that we have to work with says the Warriors were going to figure it out.
What does the rest of the league do now? I mean, that's been a story that I think's been written in the past few days by multiple people. What does the league do? And particularly from a Thunder perspective. You got a lot of people who want to say, oh, Sam Presti, you blew it. At the same time, you got a lot of people who want to say, you know, the Warriors came into a set of circumstances that allowed for all of this to happen, so you can't be reactionary and think that you're going to make up this ground in one off season. And this goes for all other 29 teams too, including the Cleveland Cavaliers, who, for making it to the finals as many times as they have, we still see that there's a gap. There's a big gap in terms of talent.
Yeah, playing better is not the answer for anybody, including Cleveland.
Yeah.
Playing better doesn't help you.
No, Cleveland could have played better in this series. They couldn't play better than they did in the game they won. Like, they literally couldn't play better than that. But they could have played better in the series and not had a difference in the outcome. Not even won one more game.
And Adam Silver's nonsensical statement, I think, is on the one of the game two or three, he was on with halftime. He did his halftime, and he was asked by the blonde-headed gal, forgot her name. She asked him, you know, what do you say about the disparity? And he said, well, you know, this just gives teams the incentive. You know, you want to be as good as the Warriors, work harder. Well, hard work is not going to beat the Warriors. That's not going to beat them. Fanatical work is not going to beat the Warriors. You can't overcome that kind of talent discrepancy.
Hard work didn't create this current iteration of the Warriors.
Right. Well,
I mean, you can look at the draft history and you know, for their core three guys, they were developed in house. They made excellent draft picks. They picked Draymond, Steph, and Clay. But hard work didn't create Durant. Like a jump in the salary cap created Durant.
Right.
And then those guys, you know, talking behind the scenes, texting, whatever, flirting, whatnot, and that created Durant. That wasn't a hard work situation. I mean, maybe it was hard work, Draymond punching his thumbs and texting a bunch. But
it was,
like,
the work was building what they built before and making it appealing to him by building what they had built. They drafted great. They built a great team. They built a 73-win team without him. And they did that without free agency, really. I mean, they got bits and pieces. They built that core through the draft, and that, I think, you know, I've talked to some NBA front office people. Nobody takes that away from them. Everybody says They hit home runs. They nailed it in those drafts. They picked the right mix of guys. But then they were able to do something that those circumstances created that shouldn't, you know, that the NBA over the course of its history and especially its recent history has said it doesn't want. I mean, this is exactly what the NBA set out to not do not that long ago when we had a work stoppage, was keep stars from joining other stars.
And I think that's what a lot of fans just easily sweep under the rug in this entire Golden State dynasty thing that they have going on here, that they built this thing in-house. It's not that they went and got – people are mad about the free agency aspects of this whole thing. They didn't go get Steph Curry or Draymond Green or Klay Thompson. Those are guys that they drafted that other people passed on.
Yep.
This wasn't the number one overall pick or the number two. Steph Curry was a lottery guy. Klay Thompson was a lottery guy, but they weren't in the top five.
Right.
Draymond Green was a second-round pick.
Everybody was just about to draft Draymond Green, you know, now. Yeah. he was next on our board. We were going to get him next, but we had to take this guy
and
instead.
And then it takes the wherewithal of Steve Kerr putting Draymond Green into the starting lineup.
Yep.
You know, making him a guy who's an undersized power forward and trusting him to be that defensive anchor. Like, this isn't a bunch of them just getting lucky. There's some luck involved with the cap spike, with Steph's injury leading to, you know, him getting a below market deal that can allow for all these guys to sign. Yeah,
but that contract at the time, there were people who questioned that contract.
Yeah.
That contract was very, there were people who thought, well, he's got these bad ankles. Maybe it's not worth paying him that amount of money. But they did that. They made a lot of smart moves, and that's the thing. Like, just whatever you think about the Warriors, don't take that away from them. It is absolutely within everybody's rights to be upset about the spike and the way that allowed what happened with Kevin Durant. But they built a great team without him.
Enes Kanter made $5 million more dollars than Steph Curry last year. Just for anybody who's curious, I think Steph made about 12,
and has for the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's how you win. That's how you win titles, when you got your best player, arguably the best player in the league, one of the top five players in the league, making probably less than half as much as he should be making. Probably
by the way,
more.
I think, and maybe this is recency bias or whatever, I think inarguably not the best player in the league. And not in the top two. I mean,
it's either LeBron or Durant probably.
I think the real revelation of the thing that I walked away from the finals thinking was, and maybe I'm wrong, as great as the Warriors have been over the last 3 years, I watched those finals and thought, if not for Kevin Durant, they're losing. Like, this is what they went out to get him for, and they needed him for this. They weren't going to win. LeBron has played incredibly well against those guys, and he was great again. And to me, the reason they got big leads in the games they had big leads, and the reason they stretched out when the games got close, it was Kevin Durant.
I tend to agree with you from a Thunder standpoint, too, because we saw in the Thunder games when it was remotely close, for the short amount of times when it was close, Kevin Durant said, all right, this ain't going to be a game anymore. Yep. And Kevin Durant went off, and it wasn't a game anymore. And he decided to go off and say, okay, let's not make this a game. Let me put 12 on Andre Robertson real quick. Bam. Oh, Jeremy Grant dunked in my face? Yeah, let me go score about 14 points in a row.
Yeah.
And that's what he'd do for the Thunder.
Oh, Enes Kanter has something to say? I got something for him.
Yeah. you stay there on the bench, big guy. Barry, you wrote an interesting column amid all the the reactions from the NBA Finals. Kevin Durant finally getting his title. We saw the waves of emotion that came with that, with his parents being on the podium with him, and him winning the MVP award, and him celebrating with the Warriors fans, and him holding the trophy. You know, he finally got his NBA Finals trophy. But you wrote a column this week about the trophy essentially being Kevin Durant's trophy wife. I thought it was strong, but you went ahead and brought it. I was happy for Kevin in the moment. I still am. But the trophy wife, can you explain that analogy to the folks on the podcast?
I mean, I'm Kevin and all his family and his friends and all his people, they're ecstatic, and they got what they wanted, I guess. But there's not anybody that really values the NBA and cares about legacy and all that stuff that's sitting here thinking, well, Kevin Durant did it. Kevin Durant finally did it. Some people have written that. I don't actually believe they believe that, but Kevin Durant did not win an NBA title Monday night. I don't know why people keep saying that. He won an NBA title on July 4th. That's when the championship was won. And everything else is just dates and appointment television. They got to fill up the TV slots to get your checks. But This was not any kind of accomplishment. What kind of an accomplishment is that?
I mean,
you know, when the quarterback at Sand Springs transfers to Union and joins them and wins a state title, does that make him some sort of legendary hero? No. I mean, that's what happened. It was a preordained championship. And so, you know, just so when we see one of our, you know, you guys are young, but when I see one of my old friends or somebody my age walking around with a 31-year-old wife, I don't think, man, what a stud he is. I think, man, he got a lot of money. That's what I think. And so when I see Kevin Durant with the championship ring, I think, well, you know, he jumped on board the SS Warrior and Draymond Green and Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and all the people who did all the things you guys were talking about a few minutes ago, setting up this great team. They did all the heavy lifting. He just sort of sailed through the finish line. He ran the last 200 meters of a marathon. That's what Kevin Durant did.
Nike told me everybody doubted this. That's the impression I got from Nike. Nobody thought this could happen.
Yeah. Everybody doubted Kevin Durant in Golden State.
There's people out there who didn't want it to happen. Nobody doubted anything. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of people who didn't want it.
Probably everybody who's walking by us on the street right now. Possible. All the people that we can see on the sidewalk, probably all those people didn't want it to happen, I'm guessing.
Now, I've actually run into a good amount of people who are actually around Oklahoma City who are genuinely happy for Kevin and what he accomplished. And that's cool, too. What I find interesting is, aside from, you know, Kevin's decision, just the way that we've written about this in terms of the media, you know, throughout the series, throughout the year, to the post playoffs, you know, this notion that it was tough, or there was a period where they had to adjust to each other, and I get all that, and Barry, you noted this in your column about Steve Kerr, you know, being really, really funny and showing some light moments in defeat. I mean, in victory, not taking a lot of credit for, you know, these great players coming together when a lot of coaches might do that. But, you know, they talked about periods. A lot of people have written about periods where, you know, Durant and Curry had this thing like, oh, who's going to shoot? Who's not going to shoot? I don't know. It's not like, all right, first of all, they're two of the top five players in the NBA. I'm pretty sure that thing would have figured itself out as it did, no matter what. There wasn't some like super struggle for ball dominance with the Golden State Warriors. Like, they're great players. They're going to figure it out. And second, they had an entire year to do it. It's not like they picked up Kevin Durant mid-season and all of a sudden they had to make this like on the fly adjustment with like some middling player or even some great player. They had him for an entire season.
The best.
It's like we made up conflict.
Right. Make up drama because there was no drama.
Yeah, it's not there, you have to create it.
It was like an overwhelmingly unclimatic, like, inevitability. So we had to make up that this team was struggling. When Kevin Durant went out, how many games did they lose? Two?
Maybe two, but they went on a big streak. They got on a hot streak while he was out.
Yeah.
And then stayed good. The best, Michael Rosenberg from Sports Illustrated has the best paragraph I've read about this.
He wrote the best anything.
Said, if I see one more analyst point to a piece of lint in front of you and claim it's a hurdle, I'm going to get physically ill. Your coach couldn't sit on the bench? Come on. You had to learn to coexist on the floor with Curry? I mean, really? This is like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett figuring out how to split the dinner check. It's not adversity, it's accounting.
Yeah. And again, it's not to knock what Durant did, because he made the best decision for his career and it worked out beautifully.
I'm not really accepting that. I don't know if he made the best decision for his career.
Do explain.
I mean, if he cares what people think of him as a historic basketball player, I would say he did not make the best decision. He came across as weak, he came across as non-competitive. He came across as trying to take the easy road.
I feel like we were probably saying the same things about LeBron James when he went to Miami, though. There were a lot of people.
There were a lot of people who discredited
LeBron James's first title against the Thunder, he was with the Heat.
But what I would say is that's because we didn't know any better. The Heat looked like a great team, but they hadn't done anything together. And it was proven that they weren't extra special. Dallas beat them in year one. San Antonio beat them in year four. They were a great team, but they were beatable. Kevin Durant formed a literal unbeatable team.
Yeah, the one big difference there, and there were people who were saying it about LeBron. The biggest difference, obviously, is that LeBron, when LeBron left Cleveland, it was like LeBron and four sacks of potatoes, like playing in the finals. Durant left a team that was competitive, that was competing for a championship, and was competing with the Warriors. And so that I think, is the biggest difference. But I do think if they go on and win three more titles, and Durant wins four titles there, I think history is going to be much kinder to him, Barry, than you're being in the moment.
You may be right.
People are just going to say, "What a great winner! He went there and won titles."
And that's what happened with LeBron.
Yeah,
we said, "Ha ha! You lost to the Mavericks in your eye," and then when he won the first title against the Thunder, it was, "Oh, LeBron got his title, but he still had to leave Cleveland to do it." Like we never validated LeBron fully until he came back to Cleveland and dragged that team to the title. And even when he won that title in Cleveland, we still say, well, if Draymond wasn't hurt, which I fully think the Warriors would have won that title if he wasn't suspended. But we still find ways to take away credit from LeBron James as he's accomplished all of these things and won three titles. I think the farther we get removed from Durant and this decision, we'll appreciate him as the player more and more, and the contributions that he made. That doesn't mean that this season wasn't easy. I think that this season was extremely easy for him because Durant his efficiency was so high because he was playing with some of the best players in the league, and he made a team that was the best team in the league even better. But I think the farther we get away from it, the more we'll appreciate just how good of a ball player Durant was. And watching him in this series,
he had a great finals.
It made me appreciate him again because you go through this entire year and you don't pay attention to the Warriors because it's frankly boring to watch. They're smashing everybody and they're doing what they're supposed to do. But when you get to focus on Durant again against great teams and he's hitting big shots in LeBron's eye and anybody else who tries to step to him, it's like, yeah, that was the dude. That was the dude in Oklahoma City.
That's the kind of thing that burns me up more than any when people talk about Durant elevating his game or Durant arriving as a player. Hey, this is what Durant has always done. He's always been this kind of player.
Yeah.
He's always been unbelievable. He's always been, are you kidding me? 6'11" and handle the ball and shoot like that? He's always been a rim protector. He's always been a great rebounder. He's always done this. He's just now doing it on an all-star team. Difference.
He's doing it with three Hall of Famers. he just had one next to him as opposed to three. There's also the idea, and we won't go too long on this. We can get into this later in the summer or whatever. But as this season's gone on and we've learned more about Durant's decision, it seems to believe that the culture has had far more to deal with this than we ever anticipated. Durant always said he wanted to, play basketball, go to a place where he could play basketball, have fun, have good teammates and such. But it seems like that made even more of a difference than we ever anticipated. And I can't help but think about two figures, Sam Presti, the guy who shaped the Thunder culture, and Russell Westbrook, the guy who defines it now. How much do you all think that those two guys had, an impact in Kevin Durant eventually saying, not that I can't beat the Golden State Warriors anymore, but I just want to do something different that doesn't have anything to do with this.
If you'll notice, what I wrote yesterday for the Wednesday Oklahoman, what I've said today, really I've not brought up the Thunder or Durant leaving the Thunder. If Durant wanted to leave Oklahoma City, that's his right. I got no problem with that. My problem is going to a historically great team and making them unbeatable. That's dirty pool, in my opinion. Leaving the Thunder, I can understand that. I mean, it's becoming pretty clear. A year later, it's becoming pretty clear. The guy didn't want to play with Russell Westbrook anymore. And it might not even been the playing part. It might have just been the
living,
being around him. He might have just said, you know what? I think I'll go spend the next 8-9 years taking road trips with somebody else, going to practice with somebody else. That's literally the decision he might have made.
You can win a lot of games with somebody. You can be really successful with somebody, whether it's in sports or business or any or family. And that doesn't mean you want to be around that person all the time and get on with them. You might just think, you know, this might be a situation I want to find elsewhere.
Yeah. Durant's decision was on July 4th, we didn't really know this, but we pretty much know it now. It was an indictment of Russell Westbrook. I don't think and perhaps Sam Presti and the Thunder culture, don't know for sure. Absolutely, we know it's an indictment of Russell Westbrook.
And that's not a let's blame Russell Westbrook for Kevin Durant leaving, because it can't all be 100% Russell Westbrook's the reason Kevin Durant left. Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City for a myriad of factors, one of which he left to go to a better team, which we see, obviously, we've seen throughout this entire season. Part of it, Russell Westbrook. Part of it, the culture in Golden State, which has shown itself to be one of the best in the NBA. Everybody loves playing there. Everybody loves being in San Francisco. You know, just the freedom with which Kevin Durant is allowed to express himself through the media. It's a lot of things that were put together that led to this decision. It wasn't just one thing. But for us as the media, or for people as fans, to deny that Russell Westbrook or the Thunder culture had nothing to do with that, it strikes me as a little naive.
Yeah, I don't – like I said, if he wanted to leave, I respect that. I didn't like where he went. As a connoisseur of the NBA, I didn't like where he went.
That's fair.
History is – it's going to be interesting to see how we look back and how people down the road look back at that partnership, the Durant-Westbrook partnership, because they're going to look at those years of greatness, all those years where they had opportunities, they were right there, they made the finals, they were in the Western Conference Finals. They were amazing together. They're going to be Hall of Fame players who played a bulk of their career together and were awesome. And then they separated, and one of them went off and won the championship and the finals MVP, and the other one stayed behind. They weren't as good, and he was going to win the league MVP. And there's going to be some question about how much, you know, each guy, I think, kind of held the other guy back. Was Westbrook always wanting to do the things he did this year and couldn't do it? Was Durant always kind of wanting the freedom that he got in that system playing with Golden State and couldn't have it? So it's, you know, the Westbrook-Durant narrative is kind of exhausting, but it's going to be something that continues on for as long as they play.
Most fascinating thing to me is if they would have won the title this last year, if they would have finished off Golden State in the Western Conference Finals and then somehow beat Cleveland, would Durant have stayed? That is the thing that I'm going to think about for a while.
That's a great question.
He might have walked regardless.
Hard to know, because I think when you listed all those factors, you know, one of the other factors I think has to be this: the culture of you got to win it as a great player. I think that has to be at least one of those many factors of him leaving, that he thought, I got to get one of these for my legacy. And if he has one, that factor at least is gone. It doesn't mean anything about the other factors, though.
I tend to think he was still going to go. I even brought this up a year ago. I actually think it's going to be would have been easier for him to leave with a title than without one.
Yeah.
I mean, he could say, my work is done, and who's to argue? So I think he would have gone either way.
Well, we talked plenty about Kevin Durant today. maybe next time we'll get in a little bit more of Russell Westbrook.
Next week will be Westbrook week. We'll be leading up to the MVP vote.
Yep.
And draft week. Next week's a big
two podcasts. Might have to podcast twice.
One is technically next week and the one is the following week, but they kind of lead into like a 5-day period together.
We'll have a draft cast. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the draft prospects Brett and I have been writing about and are still writing about for our draft series. And then we will get a little bit more into the Russell Westbrook MVP and what's next for him going into free agency on July 1st. Until then, thanks for listening, and sorry we beat you over the head with the sorrow of Kevin Durant. But thanks for listening.